welcome back, folks, to this hour, this segment of the Hagman and the Hagman Reporter. Our very special guest, Mr. Jerry Robinson, FTMDaily.com. FTM, as in FollowTheMoneyDaily.com, tremendous author of Bankruptcy of Our Nation. I've got it right here, revised and expanded. It's a good read.
And if I can, on FTMDaily.com, you can subscribe to a few things. They have a newsletter that goes out. They also have a weekly podcast, FTM Weekly, you can subscribe to. And go to the sites, because you can also become an FTM insider.
Yeah.
Getting the same information that Jerry gives his clients, as well as he said he uses himself. That part of his site is a subscription-based, but it's well worth it.
Oh yeah, man. Look,
if you're in the market.
Anyone who really is concerned about what to do and when to do it, you know, again, the wise man sees trouble and gets out of the way. And that's what Mr. Robinson is really adept at providing. Before we get back to the program, folks, how's your stress level, everyone? Can you tell I wasn't listening to Whole Tones Live today? WholeTonesLive.com. You know, music is one of life's greatest pleasures. It's got tremendous power. And if you're stressed, if you're overworked, if you're overwhelmed, if you're unmotivated, if you feel like life is running you instead of you running your life, you're not alone. But now you can experience the scientifically proven powers of music therapy with Whole Tones. It's a collection. There's a collection of proven music therapy that can help reduce stress, ease your mind, motivate you. You can get started today, folks. Listen to a free sample of this amazing music that heals and inspires at WholeTonesLive.com. And I just want to make sure people get it right. It's W-H-O-L-E, WholeTonesLive.com. We've gotten so many emails from people. One saying, you know, I started playing Whole Tones throughout my workday, and I was more creative, I was more motivated, and the work I was doing seemed much easier, and my mind was a lot clearer. And of course, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, we had Michael Terrell, the creator of WholeTonesLive.com, on our show, and he explained how this music was inspired by the music frequencies of King David. And if you are like us, where, you know, you're just jumbled a lot of times, well, hey, WholeTonesLive.com, and experience the healing frequency music projects. These frequencies were studied in the music of King David and believed to have astounding healing effects. Now you can benefit from this revitalization healing music therapy simply by listening daily to this music in the comfort of your own home or office or car. No more road rage for you, right? Well, support our broadcast and go to WholeTonesLive.com and get a free sample of the soothing, relaxing, revitalizing musical tones. But you know what? Even go do better than that. Order a DVD set, because you're going to find, as we have, it revolutionizes your life. That's WholeTonesLive.com, as you see on the screen right there. If you're watching this live on YouTube, WholeTonesLive.com.
All right, with that, let's get back to our guest, Mr. Jerry Robinson. Again, his website is FTMDaily.com. That's FollowTheMoneyDaily.com, but FTM for short. Jerry, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
All right, yeah. Where we left off in our number one in our interview with you, and where we stopped at the break, you were giving an example. You were talking about Iran, and then you were starting to give an example about the debt instrument money we have.
And a home value of $100,000, and before we cut you off.
Yeah, because the question was, in essence, about the U.S. dollar and what it would look like if it was no longer the primary reserve currency. If it was no longer the global reserve currency, then what would the U.S. dollar look like? What would that mean to you and me? We had said that it would initially mean inflation and then deflation. And the reason why is that you no longer have that same level of global demand, right? You had a level of global demand at that premium level. At that area where you are the chief currency in the world, the global reserve currency, that status provides a tremendous amount of global demand for your currency. Therefore, your central bank can then go out and print lots of money, because it'll know that there'll be a demand out there to catch it. They would never do that if there was not an existing demand base, because if not, because it would create mass inflation. So in the way down for the United States dollar, if it descends from being the top global currency, maybe to a second or a third tier, then what that means in essence for you and I is that there'll be less global demand, which means there'll be more initially here in the United States, more dollars here chasing too few goods. So you have inflation. That inflation is then followed by a period of deflation as the Fed attempts to suck all that money out of the economy. Now, how does the Fed suck money out of the economy? The way they do that is they raise interest rates, because whenever the interest rates are raised, then you and I have an incentive then to take our money out of the mattress or wherever it is and take it down to the bank, because they're going to give us 5%, 6%. That sounds great today, doesn't it? So if the bank would pay, if the banks would pay us that, then we would take our, you know, dollars to the banks. Well, they're not paying us that. In fact, they're paying us hardly anything. Therefore, cash is not really, there's not as much cash in the banking system as they would like. Therefore, you know, over time, we would see higher interest rates, and that, of course, would lead to less money in the system. And when you have less money in the system, everything costs less. Perfect example, what we were going to give before the break, is that if you have an economy that has, let's just use an illustration. Let's just say we have an economy, it's a little island, and it has a total of 1,000 U.S. dollars as its economy. If that's the case, let's say you got three people living there. If that's the case, no house can cost more than $1,000, of course. And that would make no sense for the house to cost $1,000, because that means that there are no other valuable assets on the island. And that doesn't make any sense. So therefore, that house would become worth more if there was more money in the system, because it could cost more if there was more money in the system. But if there's only $1,000 in the system, then the house can only cost at maximum $1,000. So as your overall dollar supply goes down because the demand has gone down, the value of everything also goes down. People are stuck in a mentality that teaches them, and this is part of the bankster's idea and the consumption trap, is that the present must be the minimum. In other words, you know, I need to get a raise, right? My paycheck needs to go up, right? That's the mentality. Here's another part of that idea. My house value needs to go up. Here's another one. My 401k should be going up. My IRA should be going up. Okay. That's interesting, and that's where we live today. But that is what we expect now. And the only way to have that happen is if you can consistently have an expanding monetary supply. We have expanded our monetary supply to its outer limits. We can no longer maintain it at this level, and there's no longer a reason to, because global demand is declining. Therefore, dollar supply has no other choice except maybe for one last spurt of QE4, which we could see unfolding in 2016. Without one more spurt before you finally have the system have to begin contracting, the dollar demand will no longer be at that level. Now, there's people who disagree with that. There's people who say that the U.S. will emerge out of the present chaos victorious and the strongest. They say that China has all kinds of economic issues. India is not ready to take over the crown. Europe is a total mess. Britain, you know, can't even make up its mind if it wants to be in the EU. South America is an absolute wreck. Africa is in no place. So they go around the world and they say, who else but the U.S.? The Middle East, of course, they're not ready. So there is this idea that the U.S. dollar could continue on for some time, longer than we may think. Remember what John Maynard Keynes once said. He didn't say everything that I would agree with. It's certainly not. But one thing that I did agree with is that he says the markets have the ability to, or the markets can remain irrational longer than I can remain solvent, right? So I may believe that the U.S. dollar is going to go down. I may believe that the stock market is going to crash, but if we've seen anything, we've seen that irrationality is accepted, right? We know that irrationality is okay, apparently, with investors. So therefore, how long will irrationality be acceptable? We don't know. A lot of it has to do with what the Fed says. The power of their words are being highly measured right now.
Interesting. Folks, I want to direct your attention to FTMDaily.com. And I just want to say thank you for this podcast, How to Be Happy With or Without Money. You did a wonderful interview with Randy Alcorn. And I would urge everyone to listen to that podcast from mid-January, I believe, January 20th, 2016. It's just an interesting, this all was off topic, but really interesting. It deals with happiness, your personal happiness. And a lot of people today are, I mean, we see this economic freight train that's really coming off the tracks, and we're stressed and everything else. But to that particular podcast is very interesting.
Yeah,
really,
but so many people base their happiness on the amount of money they have.
Yeah.
And that is a myth.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, all right. Jerry, fantastic explanation, too, by all of this. And this Keynesian economic theory, I mean, this model, yeah, I get this. I mean, the dollar's expanding well beyond its limit. You mentioned QE4. Oh, man. Can it really be done? I mean, QE indefinitely, I guess, was the last one, or, you know, but another round of QE. Is that really in the cards, do you think?
There's no other choice. There's really no other choice but QE. What is the Fed going to do? I mean, they can't raise rates. They know that. I mean, look at the talk that came out. I mean, and this is really what you have to pay attention to. Remember, people often talk about the mainstream press, and they say, you know, of course it's controlled by 5-6 corporations, mega corporations. They control what we hear, what we think, what we see, what we think, how we feel. They control the electoral process. They control, you know, they filter everything. I mean, they're the filter for everything. And then when they're not telling you what to think, then they put their advertisers on to just, you know, irk you even more and tell you why you're not happy and all of this. So the whole mainstream press, people often say, well, they won't ever tell you the truth. Well, that's not true. Sometimes stories will slip through the mainstream press, but here's the key. And I think we might have talked about this last time I was on. But when it comes to the mainstream press, you have to pay attention to the stories that they hammer over and over and over and over again. Those are the ones that you have to pay attention to. That's the propaganda. That's the propaganda. There's a ton of propaganda around the refugee crisis. There's a ton of propaganda around Iran. Let me tell you, there's something not a lot of propaganda around here in the mainstream press. Saudi Arabia. In fact, there's virtual silence as Saudi Arabia unites with 20 different armies across the world, Arab armies, and is having its largest military drill ever, and yet it has the gall to point at Iran, who has no nuclear weapons, and tell the world that they're the ones that everyone should be concerned about. Israel finally woke up, I think, last week, whenever there was a story in the Times of Israel where someone was making the case that maybe we need to rethink our alliance with Saudi Arabia, i.e. the cauldron and the inner layer of the worst kinds of Islam. I mean, the most vile form, the same form of Islam that ISIS holds to, the same form of Islam that Al-Qaeda holds to. It's the same exact version of Islam. And yet they have convinced Americans that Iran is the problem. It's like the Twilight Zone. I mean, all you hear out of conservative people is that Muslims are the problem, right? Except Saudi Muslims, apparently, right? Except Saudi Muslims. And so they think that the Saudis are our buddies. It came out today, there was a story that a Saudi a Saudi investor owns a pretty large share in a company that works on Air Force One. And it's these kinds of infiltrations that are very uncomfortable. And I think Iran has been a point of propaganda. Back to propaganda. One thing that came out and slipped out of the media, and this went away immediately, was the talk of a policy error. Financial Times released this right after the beginning of the year, in January. Financial Times headline, talk of Fed policy error grows. That's growing in private. It's not growing in public. The Federal Reserve may have made a huge mistake, Washington Post. Investors Business Daily, U-turn, is the Federal Reserve's next move a rate cut? Now, the Fed is very likely to lower interest rates. They're going to take a lower path, they said already, if, quote, the global economy disappoints. Well, the global economy is as disappointing as it can possibly be. And in fact, it's only getting worse. The latest numbers out of China, the latest trade numbers out of China, were absolutely horrific. We have not seen numbers like this in many, 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 many moons. It's been a long time. So China's bad. India's struggling. The European Union is an absolute wreck. They are promising more negative interest rates, and the ECB is going to squeeze more monetary easing out in March. The Bank of Japan has negative interest rates. Russia is an absolute wreck because of the oil prices. Saudi Arabia just had its rating cut today by the S&P. It's been lowered again. Venezuela is on the verge of absolute, complete, total collapse. People they don't even have toilet paper in Venezuela in many parts of the country. I mean, Mexico is not in good shape. Canada just sold all of its gold reserves. All of its gold reserves have been sold. I mean, you just go around the world and you see problem after problem after problem, and you think to yourself, what's going to replace the dollar? What's going to possibly replace the dollar? Well, for now, the Fed has to play daddy, and it has to continue to soothe the overall global markets. And the only way to do that is for it to agree with the rest of the global central banks and ease. Other central banks are doing it. ECB is going to do more in March. The Bank of England is already backpedaling, and the Fed is going to. But they got to be suave about it. They got to be cool about it. They got to convince the institutional investors that they got it all under control. But in reality, the Fed is making it up as they go along.
That's a terrible, well, I unsurprising but rather terrifying thought nonetheless. So how, and maybe this is an unfair question, but how do you see this playing out then? I mean, if everybody is in trouble, it's just the degrees to which they are. I mean, how does this play out?
Yeah, right now, $19 trillion in debt. You know, you have no plan to solve the entitlement crisis. You have student loan debt levels out of control. You have personal debt out of control. You have people on the verge. They're not ready for an emergency. You have a tremendous amount of people who have no plan for retirement. You have a lot of bad things when you look forward to the we talked about the entitlement crisis, but when you look at Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, they're insolvency. And you take a look at what that's actually going to mean. The widows and the orphans are going to be hurt, not the fat cats. Don't worry about the 1%. Don't worry about the 2% or the 10%. Worry about the widows and orphans who are going to be crushed by this. Of course they will, and the banksters don't care because they're making money right now. That's what it's all about. But the $19 trillion in debt only grows with the next president. And what's going to happen, I believe, and this is just from my own humble perspective, because again, I'm not a political hack. I follow politics, but you know, I certainly do not prescribe to either party at all in any shape or form. However, I will say that as we move forward in 2016, I think it's interesting that virtually no presidential candidate is really talking about some of these deeper issues. They're pointing at surface issues that are designed to elicit a response. They're emotional issues. They're not real issues. Now, they may be real issues to some people, but the fact of the matter is that there are degrees. If you're on the Titanic and somebody has a nosebleed, yeah, that may be a problem, but it's not the biggest problem in the room, right? So, yeah. Well, we may have problems that these guys are pointing at, But these problems are just minor compared to the major problems in the fact that we have a debt-based monetary system that is getting more and more out of control, that we have banks that are 30 to 40% larger than they were in 2007, and that there's no plan to fix it, that we take care of nuclear reactors and protect them with more safeguards than we do the treasuries of the public's wealth. We take our money to the banks and we say, well, we hope our money's going to be okay here. But in reality, the banks are running a scam. They're loaning out money they don't have. They're making bad loans. There's just a whole number of problems with the banking system that we just can't go into. And then you all have the same problem in Europe. You know, so the whole thing is, where does it end up? It's going to end up in a place where the stock market is going to likely crash, pull back around 60%, in my estimation, and that would be just simply to get back to a place where the market would even make sense. It would take about a 60% haircut here in order for the market to even begin to resemble anything healthy. P.E. ratios on companies are still wild. Not like we saw back in 2000, not quite like we saw back in 2008, especially with the pullback we have had. But, you know, we expect to see a very serious market crash. We expect people to be hurt by that. All the right people will be hurt by that. All the wrong people will be helped by that. The banks are able to profit when markets go down. The average individual can too, but he's not taught that in school, and he's not taught that on his nightly sitcoms. So he doesn't know that. He's not able to do that. He's not tapped into that. And so the banksters are going to be the one that profit, and the people who are working hard, you know, trying to get a raise, are going to get like sheep to the slaughter. And they put all their money in these target date mutual funds and their 401ks that are underperforming. They're full of fees. I could go on.
If we could, just a little bit off topic, Jerry, the Baltic Dry Index, we saw it rise again today, another 6 points, but it is at, you know, bare minimum.
Historically low.
What kind of impact can we expect from the I think if it was at 306 yesterday, that means 312 today. In 2008, in May of 2008, it was at a high of 11,000 plus. Today, it's 312 at its close. What does that tell us?
Well, the Baltic Exchange, for people who don't know what that is, because I do see that occasionally in the headlines, and I wonder if people even know, you know, what that is. But it's basically the Baltic Exchange has a main sea freight index, and it tracks rates for ships that are carrying things like copper or other basically industrial commodities. So corporations or companies overseas or governments need this, and so they ship industrial commodities by sea. But that index, as you mentioned, has fallen. It's been in a free fall since August of last year. It's fallen at least 30-35% since that time. Put simply, if you just want to simplify it, there's too many shipping boats on the water. There's not enough industrial commodity shipment demand. People are not buying commodities. Even though prices are low, the demand for those commodities is also declining as corporations slow down, as the economy slow down. So when industrial commodity demand slows around the globe, it represents a global economic contraction. So we are presently facing, we are in a worldwide economic contraction that is happening right now, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, here at Follow the Money, as we mentioned earlier, we monitor 40 global stock markets in real time each and every day of the week, and when something changes, we notice instantly. We currently share our research with our subscribers in the form of a weekly update that they can get. But the economies around the world are slowing down, and stock markets, as we mentioned, are in downtrends across the world. Nearly every single market we're tracking is in a downtrend. Some of them are in early downtrends. They've just formed the downtrend, so that means there's going to be a lot of money made on the way down if it really does slide. other markets have been beaten down so far, such as Greece, Italy. Then you have other markets like natural gas, coal, some uranium, which is not beaten down too much right this second. But you look at some of these commodities, and you see that commodities move in cycles. And so commodities will eventually curl up, and our system will catch those. And we put out alerts every time gold, or every time silver, or every time palladium, or every time oil, or every time the U.S. dollar, or every time the euro. We're watching 18 different, or maybe 20 different commodities, 40 different global markets, 10 different currencies, and we just track them and watch them. And the Baltic Exchange is not an index that carries as much weight as it used to, but the fact that it's down at an all-time low basically means there's too many shipping boats on the water and there's not enough industrial commodity shipment demand. That's what it means.
Well, thank you. And our resident expert, Larry M. from Santa Clarita, California, there you have that. Jerry, we got just a ton of questions for you. Hopefully you can entertain a few, if you don't mind, from listeners from England or UK, Europe, and all across the United States. But before I do, I just love your book. Can I say that if the title is Bankruptcy of Our Nation, revised and expanded, folks? Here it is. Those of you watching live on YouTube, here it is. It's a fantastic book. I just want to point this out. It's well written, extremely well written. And you know, people toss around billions and the number billion and trillion all the time. It's just really, it's interesting. On page 174, you have here the difference between a billion and a trillion. And you write, just really quickly, a few years ago, in an effort to place a number, 1 billion into perspective for the American public, an advertising agency stated the following: a billion seconds ago, it was 1959. Now think about that, okay? How about this? A billion minutes ago, Jesus walked the earth. A billion hours ago, Stone Age. Anyway, wow, you talk about putting things in perspective. That is indeed a way to do it. All right. Some questions here from the audience. This is from Marta out of New Hampshire. That's all I'm going to... Yeah, Marta out of New Hampshire wants to know, all right, bottom line here, What should we be doing with our money after we have food? All prep's done. I'm going to paraphrase this. All prep's done and debt managed or paid off. What do you do with your money?
Yeah, that's the ultimate problem. People think that they want money, and so they work really, really, really hard to get money. And what happens to every single... I've never met a person who has lots of money who doesn't have this problem, and it's the truth. And anybody who has money in the audience knows exactly what I'm saying, is that you really don't want money. You don't want a big pile of money. That's not really what you want, because if you have a pile of money, then you have to worry about that pile of money, right? And so, and that's exactly what the listener is asking. She has money that's invested, maybe investable assets. She already has all of her prep done. And her problem is, what do I do with this money, right? That's exactly the problem for everybody. I get it. It makes total sense. And you know why? The reason why we don't want cash, it's a good thing. We don't want a big pile of cash. What we want is cash flow. What we teach our subscribers, and what we teach through our podcasts and the financial philosophy that we teach, even here at our own family, is we value income streams over a lump sum of cash. I would prefer to trade any pile of cash for consistent cash flow, because in the end, that's what you're doing with investments. You're taking the money that you have a big pile of and you're putting into something, hoping that you're going to get some money back and then make it worth it. So in essence, what I'm saying is that I would strongly recommend for people who are listening to this, like the listener here, to develop multiple streams of income. Think outside of the box. Right now, you may have a job, or you may be self-employed. Whatever the case is, you may have one income stream there. Attempt to think in your mind how you can develop more. And I have found this to be the key to financial freedom. Is, of course, and we have a biblical basis for what we do. So whenever I say that we find this to be true, we find the roots of our system and our plan in the Bible, the Bible itself. We want to begin by with a charitable giving plan in mind. But when it comes to creating income streams, we want to develop as many as we possibly can to protect ourselves. We're told to diversify our savings. We're told to diversify our investments. Why not diversify our income streams? And that's what we teach. If listeners in the audience want to go to our website, ftmdaily.com/income-u, that is our income university. We have a special on that right now. I think it ends tomorrow on the income university. And there we have 22 online courses that we have created on 22 different income streams that you can create both now or in retirement. 22 different ways that you can make money. And that course is it's on special right now, but just go to ftmdaily.com/income-u. You can start watching those videos tonight. We get tons of great feedback from people who just love to learn about new income streams. And then they say, hey, this is it. You know, maybe I'm going to start this on income. We encourage everybody to start a new income stream in 2016. Start a new income stream. Find something. You can do it. Absolutely. Yeah. Remember, Abraham was rich in gold. He was rich in silver. He was rich in cattle. He was rich in slaves. He had a lot of things going on. You know, the average yuppie retirement plan today is a house and a 401k. You know, those are both government-controlled assets. We want to focus on being a bit more diversified and having diversified income.
Very good. And folks, you know, we bad news all over the place, right? Well, do something for yourself. And we are not born, or we are not instructed to accept failure. And we have to pedal faster sometimes, and we have to think outside of the boxes, as Mr. Robinson said. So FTM Daily, and click on the appropriate link there. Begin to learn, because you can do it. You can do this. All right, Kathy Lee Bradley. She actually said she could use, or we could use her name. Said I met you in Florida. Love your information. A lot of praise here for you, by the way. Wants to know if you feel that gold or silver ownership. Now, this is a two-part question. Number one, gold or silver ownership. Do you feel that it will ever be? I mean, in the near term, ever be? Not criminalized, but made illegal, you know, as it was back in the 30s. Is that possible given the bad situation we find ourselves in right now economically?
Not anytime soon. And what I mean by that is that I don't believe that gold would be confiscated for a very, very simple reason. Not because it's my philosophy or because I think, you know, I know something that you don't. But instead, because it's very simple, it's very, very basic. It's economics. If you took all of the gold in the United States and you sold it, you liquidated it, you gave it to the government, it would run the government for a period of days. However, if you raided the nation's IRAs and you raided the nation's 401ks, then you could run the economy for a period of years. So for the basic reason that there is just really no sound reason, I can't imagine why Washington would want to virtually piss off so many people with guns, right, just to get money to run the government for a few days, when there are many other lucrative pies out there. Let me tell you who tells you that gold is going to be confiscated. Gold dealers. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why gold dealers tell you that. The reason why gold, and I listen, we have one of the premier gold dealers who comes on our show every single week, Tom Cloud, 40 years in the business. I pay very little over spot, but so many people today will buy gold, and they will pay outrageous amounts. Be very, very careful when you call a call center, because these people are trained to upsell you. And then what they say is I say back in the 1930s, numismatic coins, collector coins, were not confiscated. It was only the bullion coins that they wanted. And so therefore you should own numismatic coins. Well, coincidentally, numismatic coins often cost 10 to 50 times or 10 to 50% more in premium that goes in, much of that goes into the dealer's pocket. So you can imagine that he wants to sell you numismatic coins which were not rated by the government. I think it's a bunch of malarkey. I think that if you have physical gold in your hand, the government is going to have to come out to your house and take your gold. Will that happen? If that happens, you got bigger problems than losing your gold, right? So that's a Mad Max scenario. And I wouldn't live in fear of that. There's just no way you can control. If they want to come to your house and take your gold, then you know what? It's probably over.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. I mean, they're going to take, in my view, they're going to take you instead of your gold. But anyway,
they can certainly get your electronic assets much easier. Why would they go to the trouble of sending out black trucks to take your gold? Whenever it wouldn't even finance the government for but a few days. It doesn't make sense. It's a theory that only benefits gold dealers and no one else.
Okay. Fantastic. And before we get to Russ's question, I've got a question for you. You had mentioned, you said we pay very little over, very little over spot. You had mentioned outrageous spot, you know, cost. Yeah, I'll get it right here in a second. Hold on a minute. For an ounce of gold, we'll say, I'll just say for an ounce of gold, what is, and this is, the question is coming from me now. If I was to walk into a store to buy an ounce of gold, you know, a gold dealer, what's the customary premium I would be paying, or 100 ounces of gold, or whatever the average person buying online would, or buying in the store would be buying? I mean, what's getting, you can tell, I'm sorry about this, you can tell I don't buy gold, so I don't know even how to ask the question, but how much over spot would I should be expecting to pay? Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Please. Well, I mean, that's really hard to say. I mean, obviously, you want to be paying very, very little over spot. But, of course, you have to realize that there's also a cost. I mean, there's a spot price, but then there's also the price that the dealer gets it at. And I'm no expert on this. We have our own gold unit, but, you know, in Tom Cloud. But right. I'm not the gold dealer, right? So I don't sell it. But basically, whenever I go to buy gold, I go to Tom, and people can sign up. People can go to ftmdaily.com/gold, and they can get free precious metals alerts from Tom Cloud every single week. And I tell you what, their video updates from a Christian worldview on gold and silver. There's no hype. It's just good information to keep you in the loop if you invest in gold and silver. Just go to ftmdaily.com/gold and sign up for those. But, you know, he's the guy to ask. I mean, he would be able to tell you, whenever I go to buy from him, it's always very reasonable. We're talking 2 to 3% is what we're paying, as opposed to, you know, 10 to 50%. As you might pay some of these big 800 numbers that you would call, gotcha, above these big call centers.
All right. And coincidentally, I did receive a solicitation call to my home, somebody wanting me to invest in numismatic coins. And it was kind of a freaky call. I did not obviously pursue it, but it was just a really interesting and kind of freaky call. So, yeah, indeed. And I apologize for not being very articulate moments ago. Sometimes my tongue gets in the way of my.
No big deal. But you're right. There are many call centers out there that do that, and they just call out. Yeah, that's very common.
Russ from New Mexico wants to know your thoughts on the war on cash. I see headlines everywhere. Zero Hedge, Silver Doctors, and they're increasingly
today,
more dire. Yeah, we were talking about
Larry
that earlier.
Summers says he wants to kill the $100 bill, and they go on to say that, you know, this ultimately will lead to negative interest rates if they're able to take the $100 bill out of the circulation, as it is they're doing so with the $500 euro And Drudge points out that the justification for eliminating the cash will eradicate crime, in the words of Summers, make the world a better place. It is merely a ruse for the real agenda, which is implementing negative interest rates. And it goes on from there. This war on cash, we've seen countries across the world, from Norway to different parts of Europe to India, become cashless societies.
Yeah, I mean, Russ wants to know, basically, well, to kind of supplement your question, he wants to know the bottom line here with respect to the war on cash money versus the electronic money. Is this going to come soon? Are we going to see a complete digitization of our economy, I guess is the bottom line.
I think so. I mean, I definitely think so. I mean, there's been several stories that came out. I mean, there was a Larry Summers today, but that was just the cherry on top of the brownie or whatever on the sundae. I mean, there was the ECB. They're talking about scrapping the 500 euro note that came out earlier in the week. And then Germany is just dealing with something massive right now. They had a plan to introduce a limit on cash transactions to about 5,000 euros. And that's getting fierce resistance from the German population. You know, but we're seeing this. We're seeing these proposals to ban cash payments. We're seeing these proposals to eliminate these larger denomination notes. Personally, I don't carry a whole lot of cash on me. I use, you know, a debit card. I think most people are kind of in that mode. People use gift cards now. We're very used to using chips. Now the credit cards have the chip. You just slide the chip. When you go to the, you know, to the cash registry, you just slide the card in and it reads the chip. Pretty soon that chip ends up going into your body because it's just much easier. Why in the world would you want to carry a card that you could lose? And people will begin to think that's a wonderful idea for the same reason that they like many of the other things that they like. I don't know. I don't know why we're drifting the way we're drifting, but we are. And people will likely embrace the invasion of their bodies by monetary authorities to allow them to have a wonderful chip. And maybe there'll be a designer chip. Maybe you can have the Powderpuff Girl, you know, in bed, and maybe I can have the Superman one. I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll have one for kids and pets. But regardless, it's coming. And the reason why they want this is because it gives them total control. I mean, there is just absolutely nothing else better that these guys want than being able to control the monetary system like this. I mean, this is kind of, and they're going to tell you they kind of need this. Managing all of these economies with all of this cash that can be used for terrorism, it's just not working anymore, guys. We really need you to support this new electronic form of money. People are embracing it. Bitcoin is becoming more popular. I see it coming, absolutely.
And then what, though? At that point, Mr. Robinson, what do we do as Christians, I guess? We can't, there's no way we can comply, can we?
Well, I mean, again, I think it would be foolish to read what we read in Revelation 13 and then to comply with something like that, sure, because it does sound like it could be something like that. I think we need to use wisdom and discernment. I think God's people will know deception. I believe that the Bible does say that even the elect would be deceived if they could, if it were possible. I don't believe the elect can be deceived. I believe that if you are part of the elect, you will understand what's happening, but you need to be awake and you need to be aware and you need to be open. And so as far as what happens whenever it's introduced, I mean, I think it's the same way with the NSA. I mean, look, Christians don't have a whole lot of problem with the NSA spying on them. If you look at evangelical support for the NSA, it's huge. Evangelicals are very concerned about safety, and so they're okay with the NSA snooping on their conversations. They're also very, very open to other types of intrusions of their privacy. They're also very open to the CIA torture report. Who was the number one supporter of the CIA torture report, people group-wise? Evangelicals. They love them some torture, apparently. They love to see CIA torture of brown people. And so you have, in essence, you have this group of people who identify themselves as evangelicals. Why would they not take a chip that goes in their brain if it's put out by Apple? When have you not bought an Apple product?
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Or when have you not bought a Google product? It'll be devised, or maybe it comes in a Google Glass. Maybe Google Glass. I mean, here's the thing. You know, speculating on what it's going to be, I don't know. But here's what I do know, is that whenever it does arrive, whatever it is, I believe, I have enough faith that my God will give me enough discernment to know it and to avoid it. And I keep my eyes open, but I don't know exactly what form it'll come in, but I expect to discern it when I see it.
Got it. All right. All right. And I think you, well, RTL asked your thoughts on Bitcoin. I'll just leave it at that. What are your thoughts on Bitcoin as an alternative for, you know, holding money in U.S. dollars?
Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with Bitcoin. I wouldn't call myself a fan. I'm an owner of Bitcoin. I've owned Bitcoin for a long time. I have a friend who is high up in Bitcoin world, Trace Meyer, told me about Bitcoin a long time ago. He's a very happy man, or at least he at one point he was extremely happy, and now he's still very happy, but Bitcoin has certainly come down from its highs. Bitcoin and other types of alternative types of these digital currencies are, it's like a Pandora's box. They've been opened. The blockchain technology is incredible. I think it's amazing what they can do with it, how they can apply it in the world of finance and in the healthcare sector. I mean, the blockchain technology itself is a wow factor for anybody who fully grasps it and understands it. But you know, the public embrace is still somewhat slow. I mean, it certainly has been adopted, but it seems like the enthusiasm has slowed, and it certainly has developed and shown in the trend of the price. So Bitcoin prices are still, you know, submerged from where they were in their peaks. I think it's a dangerous technology that can be misused. I don't know who controls it. So therefore, I own some. And I think everybody should go through the process of understanding how they work, so they're not neophytes. You should understand how the basic system works. You don't have to necessarily transact in them. But you know, buying one or buying two is kind of like buying a lottery ticket. There are projections that every single Bitcoin will eventually have to be split down because there are finite numbers of Bitcoins. And once they're all mined, that'll be it. Unlike the U.S. dollar, they don't print anymore. There's only so many Bitcoins. And so there are projections from very well-known analysts who suggest that each Bitcoin could eventually be worth $1 million. People who buy them around $200 to $400, they would be very happy if that happens. It doesn't have to happen, but there are analysts who say that over time, because of the finite nature of Bitcoin, if the demand continues at its present pace, it's not unrealistic to see the price of Bitcoin rise dramatically. Now, whether that happens or not is irrelevant. It doesn't matter if that happens. What matters is will it still be around? And I think it will. I think that Bitcoin and other types of digital currencies are here to stay, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Gotcha. One more question for you. This is from Ralph out of upstate New York, and this is a really interesting question. I don't even know if you've ever got this question before. I certainly haven't got a question like this. Gentleman just came back from Western Europe, has a significant amount of euros, a couple of thousand euros. Based on what you said earlier, keep them, turn them in, cash them in. What would you do?
He's in the States. He just holds them as a form of savings.
Well, okay. He was traveling in Europe, came back mm-hmm. with a couple of thousand euros. I'm not sure exactly how or why, but nonetheless, here you go. So he's got a couple of thousand euros, and mm-hmm. just wondering, based on what you said earlier about the diversity of cash, understanding, of course, what you meant, not you know, holding it in your wallet, but he said, you know, hey, is it, you know, should, what the heck, should I hang on to them or should I cash them out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, think about it this way. I mean, most people are scared to death to hold foreign currencies because they, you know, they think they're risky or something. But the reality is people in Europe are, you know, they hold the euro overnight just like you hold the dollar overnight. Nobody's worried about it. So it's okay to hold foreign currencies, and people should, you know, get over their fear of that. You know, for example, the Swiss franc looks kind of interesting right now, as does the euro. The euro is beginning to kind of bottom out and begin to curl up, as the dollar is kind of doing the opposite. So, you know, right now, if I was holding some euros that I didn't really know what to do with, I wouldn't be in a hurry to get rid of them because right now they are very low. and they could likely go up. But I would keep my eye on it for sure. But yeah, they're in an interesting place.
It was just a really interesting and different kind of question. Never mm-hmm. got that kind of question before.
Here's a, for example, in our system right now, the long-term trend on the euro is red, but it's nearing a green right now. It's nearing a new uptrend. So that could happen, you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks. So I wouldn't be in a hurry to get rid of them right now.
Got it.
Question from Deborah M. for you, Jerry, says, I would like to develop my own business. How do I determine what type of business to develop? I have lost my job recently due to elimination and previously worked as a contractor per diem.
You know, whenever I wanted to start a company, I spent a lot of time at Barnes & Noble. I was in bookstores and libraries. You know, I spent a lot of time reading different things. I was trying to find my niche. You know, what did I want to focus on? What did I want to do? Now, I finally settled on two things. You know, of course, I'm a trader by trade, I should say. So I trade. And I'm also an economist, but I really don't do any kind of economic consulting anymore, so it's mainly just a trader. But what I do is I run a couple of different businesses. We have mainly internet businesses, and that's what I'll focus on for her. You need to find the area that you want to be in. Internet right now is still wild, wild west. You wouldn't believe it, but it really is. There are still so many huge opportunities and ways to make money. You can buy existing websites. You can trade your cash for cash flow. You can build a site and build a blog and, you know, create advertisements from that. You can do affiliate marketing. So there's many different things you can do online. You can create your own product. You can also do something bricks and mortars. But I think in the end, you need to really focus on being online because it creates automation. One thing that you got to think about when you start a business is, what do I want my life to be? Many people create a business and then they end up just creating a job. Well, that's not really what you want to do. When you create a business, you want to become somebody who has more time, not less. And the only way to do that is to have a system that you can automate. So one thing that I would do as a guy who's been owning businesses for a long time, if I had to do it over again, I would focus on businesses that are extremely time manageable, that I could manage very easily. And online fits that bill for me. I can do that from anywhere. I can be in another country and check my email, fulfill my orders, do whatever I've got to do, and, you know, make a lot of money from online from anywhere in the world. I wouldn't want to open a hot dog stand because I couldn't do it from, you know, overseas. That's why I like the internet.
Beautiful.
All right, Jerry, we have reached the end of our program already. We want to thank you again so much for coming on, folks. FTMDaily.com is the website, FTMDaily.com, and Jerry's book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation, it's an Amazon bestseller.
It's a great book.
I would advise everybody to buy it and listen to his podcast, FTM Weekly. FTM Weekly. Go to his website, FTMDaily.com, and you can find all the information, his book, his podcast, and even the subscriber section there. Jerry, it's been a quick 2 hours. We appreciate your time and your insight, and thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
All right, sir.
God bless you. You too. And we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, sir. Folks, that'll do it for us tonight. What a great 2 hours with Mr. Jerry Robinson.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tomorrow, we will be on Pastor Paul Begley's show.
I didn't get that memo.
Pastor Paul Begley will be on our show.
There you go.
Friday we'll be on Pastor Paul Begley's show from 1 to 3.
All right.
But he'll be our guest tomorrow night.
It's going to be an interesting program tomorrow. And, of course, yeah, he's got a show, very popular show.
The Coming Apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. He hasn't been on our show in a long time. So it's going to be interesting to get his take on world events. Very popular. Yes. Well, on behalf of Doug and Joe Hagman and on our point man for programming administration in the southeastern United States, JD of NeptuneDiaries.com, our director of communications from New England, Rhonda of Rhondasblessed.com, our news director rooted deep behind jihadist enemy lines, Joe Charles, and everyone else, producer and director of studio operations, Eric the Tech. Thank you, Todd at Global Star Radio Network, and for all here.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Global Star Radio Network.